I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Judgment right now.
Because we
in
have...
In the name of Jesus!
Oh, thank you.
Standing in the office of the prophet of God, I execute judgment on you, COVID-19. Oh. I execute judgment on you, Satan. You destroyer. You killer. You get out. You break your power. You get off this nation. I demand judgment on you. I demand a vaccination to come immediately.
And boy, oh boy, did we get that vaccination.
Woo! Dude, I didn't know who to thank for that, but now that I know, I'm so grateful.
Yep, that's it. Our vaccines have come in from the one and only, the one and only Kenneth Copeland. Fuck that guy.
is Kenneth Copeland? Is Righteous Gems a parody of him and his family?
Righteous Gemstones. Yeah, I guess like technically kind of it is. That song, that metal version of Kenneth Copeland, I want to give some credit here to where credit is due. That comes from Andre Antunsi. I hope I got that right. One of our patrons or one of our listeners actually sent that our way. So thank you for sending that to us. And if you want to send us anything at all, letters@sickboypodcast.com. But the reason I wanted to play that at the top of the show today, the boys got the fucking vaccine, baby. Vaxxed, waxed, and ready to fuck, as Tay says.
As the kids say. Felt good, and ready to fuck. Yeah, dog.
How good did it feel for you guys? Because I know that the night before, I like almost couldn't sleep with excitement because it was kind of like Christmas morning, especially because, you know, we all got vaccinated in the morning. So Jerry, you and I were like at 9:20 in the morning. And I think Taylor, you were around 8 a.m.
8:30.
And it was like so exciting because I knew that like when I set my alarm and woke up in the morning, I was going to the hospital to get a COVID-19 vaccination, which felt like a long time coming, you guys.
Yeah. I was sitting, so I got the shot, and then, you know, they bring you to the waiting area where you sit for 15 minutes. And somebody that I know from teaching at the yoga studio sat down across from me, and I hadn't seen him in a really long time. And I was like, hey man, what's going on? And we ended up having a really, really nice chat. And we talked about like this, how surreal the moment is, but also like how anticlimactic the whole thing is, because it's like since the shit hit the fan last year, you know, we've been everything's been building to the moment where you can get the solution to the problem. And like, this is the solution to the problem. And that's like, that's just that. And Neil deGrasse Tyson said something recently that I heard him say, which was something along the lines of like, you know, science doesn't care if you agree with it or not, because it doesn't make it false.
Right.
And this is the solution to the problem. So anyway, we were sitting there and we were talking about how like anticlimactic it was to get this shot, because, you know, you go in, you sit down, the person goes, you know, hey, you know, this is the things. These are just like some possible side effects that you might feel today or tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. Here's when you're second, you know, you can all the little things, the housekeeping. And like really midway through doing that, they poke you in the arm, like pretty much while they're saying that. And then you're gone, and you're in a waiting room, and this moment that's been building up for so long is come and gone. And so he was sitting across from me, and he was like, man, I feel like, you know, you build this up in your head. You feel like there should be, there should be someone taking photos. There should there should be people like lining the room, giving you giving you hand slaps as you come by, and the crowd roaring. Yeah. And there should be somebody that's selling you a photo that they took of you. They're like, hey, I'll for $100, I can send you a framed photo of this. Like it should be like getting off a roller coaster.
They
sell you merch.
Bri, you were right about that. There should have been luchadors because I went to the Halifax Forum. Perfect place for luchadors to be running around, giving people fucking choke slams and shit. But Tay, you and I were talking about this a couple days ago. We had this exact conversation, and my thing was, yes, the vaccine itself, the poke itself, was a little bit anticlimactic. But I think that moment that you are talking about will be the moment, and for some folks listening to this, they might have already had that moment, especially down in the U.S. because we're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That one for us will be, I think, when we attend an event that is full of fucking humans, go to a music festival, mm-hmm. Go see an F1 event. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe just.
Oh, okay.
Just
something's on daddy's Christmas
just
list.
Just putting that out there. For us, I think that's that is the climax is finally we are fucking surrounded by strangers. We are not distancing ourselves. We are fucking raging, listening to a dude play heavy metal with Kenneth Copeland yelling at us. That is the climax.
The poke itself is the montage scene, in the movie the COVID pandemic, the montage, there's a montage scene of everybody getting the poke.
Dude,
And then the scene after that is people raging at a concert. And we're not at that point yet. Some people are. But I fucking can't
picturing a really fun and intense Guy Ritchie montage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of montages and speaking of film, this is a great segue. Are either of you familiar with this film right here? And folks,
I haven't seen it yet.
Folks who are listening, if you want to see what we're looking at right now, you can go to YouTube because all of our Feel Good Friday episodes are now on YouTube. We're looking at the poster for Clint Eastwood's film called The Mule. Now, The Mule
People's actor.
Is a film that is based off a true story. Quick synopsis. It's about a guy who's in his 80s who through a series of unfortunate events, I guess, gets tied in with the Sinaloa cartel.
Yep.
Sinaloa drug cartel. I have it written right.
Let's just go with that. If you said that confidently, Jer,
I would have been
fine.
Should have stuck with it. So the movie is actually based off this guy named Leo Sharp, whose name also was known as El Tata. And Leo, or El Tata, was an American World War II vet, a horticulturist, and also happened to be a drug courier for the Sinaloa drug cartel. So super fascinating fucking story, where in October 2011... while he was in possession of 200 kilograms of cocaine, he was 87 years old. He got arrested by a trooper, Craig Zisena from the Michigan State Police during a coordinated arrest operation by the DEA.
See, when I hear that, I go, ah, man, whatever. I'm not surprised because if I was 87 years old, there's probably not a lot of crimes that I would not be deterred from committing because lifetime in jail at that point could be as short as 6 months. If you're on your way out, 87 years old, committing that crime, what's the deterrent?
Yeah.
Life in jail. You've already lived
a
full life.
If it happened in 1950 or later, Brian's not surprised.
Right.
anything that took place after 1950, Brian just goes, yeah, that makes sense.
I'm saying I would consider being a drug mule if I was 87 years old. Because fuck it.
So in the movie, they go into the reasons why he got into it. And it had to do with you know, getting money for his family.
His wife was dead. He didn't have much to live for. Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
All right. So, I'll tell you the whole in and out of that case. The criminal investigation was prosecuted by Assistant United States Attorney Chris Graveline in the Eastern District of Michigan, culminating with indictments of 25 members of the organization, including Sharp. So a bunch of people got busted. Sharp was allowed to speak at his sentencing hearing before Judge Edmonds. He addressed the judge and said, quote, "I'm really heartbroken. I did what I did, but it's done." In an effort to avoid jail, Sharp made one final strange plea. So again, just to remind you, he's a horticulturist. My God, that fucking word. he said he basically said if he could avoid jail, he proposed paying the $500,000 penalty that he owed the government by growing Hawaiian papayas. Quote, he was quoted saying, "It's so sweet and delicious." He's a really like cute old man, right?
Just like Clint.
So the court ultimately denied the offer and sentenced him to how long do you think his sentencing was for being busted with selling again 200 kilograms of coke? All right, so which works out to be 440 pounds of cocaine.
Death.
8 years.
Death.
He got 8 years.
Probably like 100 years or some crazy shit like that.
He was sentenced to 3 years in prison.
Whoa, what?
His defense.
So lifetime at that age.
I mean, at that age, yeah. His defense stated that Sharp had dementia and would do poorly in prison. And Sharp was released in 2015 due to declining health after only serving 1 year in prison. Okay? So, laying all that out, why am I talking about Leo Sharp, a.k.a. El Tata? Well, when that movie came out, it came out not long after a local story that came out of here in Nova Scotia, one that was very similar to that story. There was way too similar. So there was a Nova Scotia cocaine smuggler who his name was Jacques Jean Grenier, and he was a sailboat captain, and he got busted for $20 million worth of cocaine.
Whoa.
So there's a tie in here.
5 grams.
Canadian or American?
I think we're talking about Canadian dollars.
That's an 8-ball of coke.
So, there is a tie in as to why this is relevant to Sick Boy right now. I want to read to you, a bit from a Saltwire article that came out by Chris Lambie. Just a couple of weeks ago. And this was sent to me by someone who I know who's pretty close to me, who's a lawyer. I don't know if I can say who this person's the lawyer of, but let's say...
I don't think you should.
I don't think I should either. I don't think I should
leave it alone.
Maybe you should ask your lawyer before you decide.
I don't want to be murdered.
Let's just say that this lawyer is very close to this case. We'll put it that way. So a sailboat captain in his early 70s caught smuggling $20 million worth of cocaine from the Caribbean to Nova Scotia, can't get the treatment that he wants for his cancer in prison, and doesn't qualify for early release, according to a new parole board decision. Jean-Jacques Grenier applied for day parole to get alternative treatment for his basal cell carcinoma, according to a new decision from the Parole Board of Canada. He also wanted out of prison due to the risk of contracting COVID-19 behind bars. So this guy's sick. He's got cancer. He wants to seek this alternative treatment and is also worried he's going to get COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "The board does not believe there's sufficient information to conclude that in either case, your risk of contracting the COVID-19 virus or the treatment of your basal cell carcinoma, your continued incarceration would seriously damage your physical or mental health." So the parole board's like, "We don't believe that this serves a risk to you, and we don't believe that this treatment that you're seeking is worth us giving you day parole." The parole board goes on to say, quote, "For all these reasons, the board takes no action on your application for day parole by exception. The board has determined that your physical or mental health is not likely to suffer serious damage if you continue to be held in confinement. Grenier has been, quote, battling this disease for much of his adult life. However, it appears to be worsening at the present time. He wanted to get out of prison. So this was the treatment. He wanted to get out of prison so he could be treated with CBD oil. The cannabinoid is a marijuana derivative. I think most of us know that. Used to treat pain along with many other ailments. But it's a treatment that cannot be used or accessed within the prison that he is being held in.
Quote, that's interesting.
They go on to say, in regards to your basal cell carcinoma, the nurse practitioner at the institution reports that your oncologist is recommending that you have facial surgery, but you have refused such treatment and wish to be treated by CBD oil, which you cannot access at the institution. The nurse practitioner reports that your oncologist does not support the treatment of your cancer with CBD oil. The nurse practitioner further indicates that you would have the same access to treatment recommended by the oncologist, which is facial surgery, for your basal cell carcinoma in the institution as you would out in the community. And so basically, they basically said, no, fuck you. Like, you want this alternative treatment. We're not going to give it to you. You're going to stay in jail.
And is that because it's classified as a drug? I mean, it has to be classified as some type of drug still
cannabinoid.
Within that, like, world of the prison system, I guess?
You can't have weed. You can't have marijuana in the prison system, within a prison. So I'm guessing that would fall under,
It seems like something that just needs to be caught up with the rest of what's going on in, at least in
it
the
is
world
interesting,
and
though,
specifically our country.
It is interesting, though, because, I mean, obviously we don't have the full picture of this story, but like the fact that they said the treatment wouldn't be recommended to somebody who's outside of the institution as well. Is that valid? I mean, we're taking the lawyer / this inmate's word that this is going to be a worthwhile treatment over the nurse practitioner's word that is saying that the oncologist wouldn't even recommend this. So
do we
know that the treatment, I'm all for advocating for treatments that could potentially benefit a patient, but at the same time,
I think you should listen to the medical practitioner too. I think it's less about that and more about the fact that, I think if someone has a disease and someone's trying to manage that disease, someone also should have the right to choose the treatments that they want to manage that disease. So like our friend Layton, when he was getting coffee enemas and juice cleanses, I guarantee you his fucking oncologist didn't say, I recommend that this is the route you go. They might have said, I don't see a problem why you shouldn't do this. But they also were, I doubt that they were like, go do the alternative treatment because like that's all you should do. I think this, the guy wants to try something other than whatever it is, facial surgery. And it is a bit baffling to me that
people, I just want to say like it would be nice that if somebody wanted to choose to have a nice dinner out at like a restaurant, an expensive restaurant, that it would be great if they had that choice. Inmates don't have that choice in jail because they're in jail serving time for a crime that they committed.
Yes.
But so they don't have that choice to do that thing.
The question is, and I wouldn't be surprised if something like this, reached the highest courts in Canada as a landmark case that demarcates, where does the Charter of Rights and Freedoms begin and end for somebody who has committed a crime and has been put in prison? Because, like you said, Jer, like somebody outside of prison can choose their own path. Like they can take the recommendation of the physicians and the nurses and stuff that they see for their condition, or they can very freely choose to go and get whatever alternative treatment they may want to pursue as well. And so that's their right. And then the question is, somebody who's in prison is, okay, well that's a right that they do not have. And where is the clearly defined line in our justice and judicial system that says that they have given up that right as a result of committing a crime? And so That is ultimately the question. I mean, do I think that it's outdated that they can't access CBD, which is a very like clearly defined treatment for lots of things, whether for this thing specifically or not, it is a medical treatment for lots of people. So I do think he should be able to access it. I think the question is a much greater legal rights and freedoms question for our country.
I want to just lay this out a little more context here. So he was found, basically his crime was when he arrived in Nova Scotia about 4 years back, he didn't contact the officers with the Canadian Border Service Agency, who later showed up and found 273 kilos. So 73 more kilos than El Tata. Of cocaine hidden in his sailboat. And his financial gain, they worked out and found out, was that he was getting paid between $2,000 and $2,500 per kilo. So that works out to be like, you know, over $600,000 worth of cocaine that he was smuggling into the country. However, he has, so again, we're talking about a guy in his like late 70s or I guess early 70s in this case. He has no prior conviction on his record. And the other thing that I didn't mention was that his sentence, so El Tata was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Mr. Granier was sentenced to 13 years in prison.
Mm.
Which is a life sentence for him.
It's Canada versus the United States too. So it's two totally different legal systems. But I just want to clarify that like I'm not opposed to advocating for the rights of people who are in jail. Like I think that they should have equal access to rights.
We talked about this. We talked about this in the park earlier today, and you were like, we should
give him
the chair.
This is where Jared lies about whatever.
No, you were like, we should give him. We should gas him. And I was like, whoa.
So anyway, so the point I'm trying to make is that you said, Jared, that people should be free to choose whatever treatments that they want for their illness. I believe within a certain extent, because we talked about the like
why
okay
why so, within a certain why so within not, a certain extent
so this is why, because people get taken advantage of. I don't think that okay listen I want to it's hard because I believe that they should have the right to choose, yes, but at the same time there are people who get taken advantage of, like somebody who goes to Mexico to get treated for chronic Lyme for $40,000, and they're paying for this alternative treatment that is not going to do anything for
their
health.
But so, Brian, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about some treatment that is.
We're talking about CBD, yes, which I agree that if like CBD should be something that if the proof is there that it works in this case, it should then the laws have to catch up to that. So yes, I agree with that. But like at what point do you no longer take medical practitioners' advice and start allowing people and paying for it as a government for alternative therapies?
Well, I do have to say this. In reality, this man is in jail, and it's very likely that if I was in jail, I'd be looking for every way that I can get into the parole board to convince them that I need to get out, you know, like on a fucking day pass whenever I can. So there is that to consider, but also the fact that it's just like a straight up no. Like to have this option for a treatment that is, if it's like, we're not going to bring it to you and we're also not going to allow you to get it elsewhere. Like that to me is just a little bit fucked up.
What about the fact that he's not accepting the recommendation of the facial surgery as well?
I mean,
like, I just think it's too much of a gray area that we don't understand. Like there's very intricate details to the situation that like we don't have all of that information, but my opinion
I have all the information. I have all the information.
At the end of the day,
I'm leaning to supporting the healthcare providers.
But I can't talk about all the information because if I did, I would legally I'd get a lot of
trouble. At the end of the day, everybody, it is a question of where is the line drawn on what rights and freedoms somebody who commits a crime in Canada like pretty much voluntarily vacates.
I think it's a fuck up. What do they give up? I think it's a straight
and
up.
Where is that line drawn now?
I think
where is that line drawn now, and where should it be drawn if it should be redrawn?
I think it's a. I think it's just a standard human right. To like
so, Jer, but Jer, my question is for you is so in terms of like public health care, do you believe that everybody should have whatever option for treatment that they choose paid for by taxpayer money?
This is a good point. The fact that there is a treatment that is recommended by a physician, and you know, I don't know what the coverage whole situation is, but it is a good point. Like if there is things that are covered, that's an interesting.
But it's also that like it's not it's always that the treatments that are covered are necessarily right, because sometimes there might be will be situations where there will be alternative therapies that might do less damage than an actual, because I think of like patients going through severe rounds of chemotherapy or what's the newer cancer treatment, that Brandon had it. It was like an experimental immunotherapy that like sometimes doesn't work for patients, but wreaks a lot of havoc on their body. And they could have done something that might not have had a positive effect either, but also wouldn't have had the same damaging effect. So there's like a lot of situations where like the medical accepted advice might not necessarily be the best advice, but at the same time, I think it's more likely that it is than not.
I just, to wrap here, the one thing I want to say is that I am a fan of this new Brian that we have seen over the last few weeks. This Brian that has lost all empathy. This Brian who poo-poos on the idea of preserving tattoos of loved ones if it makes someone feel good. This idea, this Brian that thinks that the poor girl Hannah who can't burp, it just like really
come
isn't suffering anything.
To the dark side with me,
and the Brian and the Brian that thinks this guy should just rot in jail without the treatment that he truly wants.
Is that I think that if you dig deeper down, you'll realize that the reason why my stance is this way in this situation is because I believe that people are inherently good. And I believe that the nurse practitioner that's offering advice, the oncologists that are offering advice, I believe that they do have the guy's best interest at heart. And I believe that they are good people. And I believe that he is probably less educated on the matter than they are. So they're making this choice in his best interest. And I support that.
I don't know if I should say that. I don't know if I should say this on the podcast or not, but I wonder if
don't, we you could, can school me later if
I wonder
you,
I wonder if we could get the
but I'm
I
also
wonder,
I'm
I wonder if we,
also,
I was going to say I wonder if we can get the lawyer on the show to talk to us about what he thinks.
I would be very fascinated from just getting the legal standpoint of why or why not why he can or can't access that treatment, because there obviously is a legal foundation for why he's not being given, he's not being able to access it. And that is, I mean, this whole thing, I mean, Jer, you can say yay and Bri, you can say nay. And the reality is that there is just an ocean of gray in between you both of you that is so hard to, you know, wrap our heads around, because it comes down to being a legal matter, and legal legalities are not objective. They're completely subjective.
I don't think that my perspective is necessarily the right perspective to have in this situation. I'm asking the questions. I think there's a lot of information that we don't know. And like, that's why, like, I sort of sit in this gray area where there's like, you know, literally, I hear what you're saying and I care about the guy. I also think that the prison system needs to be reformed.
Literally.
And that I think that it just doesn't fucking, we don't actually rehabilitate people in jail anyway. Like, we need to look to Scandinavia in Norway, where they don't fucking punish people the same way that they do here.
Yeah.
And
give the prisoners video games.
But anyway,
that's what I think.
Yeah, I was just gonna say my thing's like, wow, I'm really shocked that our prison system isn't very progressive.
Wow.
Yeah. And 13 years sounds like a fucking crazy, crazy amount of time for this crime. Like, I think that this guy got a fucking shitty situation.
Also, your whole point there, Bri, about like the U.S. And Canada, two different medical or two different law.
You think 13 years is too long of a sentence for somebody who has taken drugs into a specific drug that is reeking havoc on a ton of people's lives all over our province, and 13 years is not enough, is too much?
I do.
Yeah, because the cocaine I think that he was brought a pawn into this in that.
Con into this.
I'm not.
Oh, dude, that's so fucking. He's a pawn. All right, as if he's just sitting around going like, "Oh my god,
dude, he had no history of criminal record." So it feels like
he never got caught doing it.
I think if you switch the sentences around for the guy in the States and the guy here in Canada, it would make more sense to me.
I mean, look, I don't know shit about shit, but I bet you 200.
Just give him more love, guys.
I bet you 200 kilos worth of cocaine that this was not the first time he's done this. And I also bet you that there is a lot of money sitting somewhere because little birdie told me that there's probably a lot of my city somewhere and no one knows where it is. So anyway,
it's
moving.
Oak Island, dude. It's a fucking treasure.
That's it. Yeah.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Moving right along, here is a sweet little update from our friend, the accessibility evangelist. Is that what Lucy calls herself?
Lucy Greco.
Yes.
Yeah, Lucy Greco.
Lucy Greco.
If folks haven't listened.
Cousin to David Greco.
That's right.
Maybe a stand-up comedian.
100%. Lucy was on the show a couple of months back, and her whole thing was the way we found Lucy was she was reviewing a washing machine from LG. And Lucy is blind, and Lucy was quite pissed about the washing machine she got from LG because she couldn't use it. It was not accessible whatsoever. She made a video about it. The video went viral. She came on the podcast. We talked about accessibility. Lovely conversation. Highly suggest you go back and listen to it if you haven't. Lucy has updated the world on her YouTube channel about her debacle with the LG washing machine. And here's a little clip from her YouTube channel with a little update as to what's happening.
Was well worth it. When we first got the machine, as you may know from watching my initial Know Before You Buy video, I was not able to use it. Thanks to some work from LG and some support and communication from them, we now have a machine that I am now able to independently do my own laundry and use this machine. So let's start at the beginning. The very first thing LG wanted to know was, would a Braille template help you? Would you be able to get around this machine with Braille on the machine? So they worked with an agency and created the initial Braille template. So let me describe this template to you. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines of Braille on the left side of the knob. And the same amount again on the right.
So for folks who are just listening, we just saw there the Braille setup that LG has worked with Lucy in installing on her washing machine that gives her the ability to see all of the options that she can choose on her washer to make it easier for her to use the fucking machine. And I was watching that video, and that little template that she has there, it's like, again, if you're not watching on YouTube, it looked like sort of like, how would you describe it? It was like laminated Braille that was like plastered onto the washing machine itself, which, like, you know, it doesn't look like, if you went to buy a washer and you saw that on the washer, you'd be like, what the fuck is this? This is so weird.
But it looks like Lucy got it made at like a local lamination.
At like Staples.
It looks like when you buy a TV at the store and you go home and you have to peel that sticker, the clear sticker off the screen. It looks like that with bumps on it.
But then I was thinking, what if she bought that washer and it had installed on the front plating those exact bumps just the way they are?
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
Or it just came with an optional sticker. Like they all get shipped with a sticker that comes off of a back plate, and then you can stick it on.
I mean, that is an option, but this idea that I had of it actually being built into the plating itself is something that I was thinking about, like how, for me, I don't need that. I don't need Braille on my washing machine. I can see it just fine right now. Fingers crossed these fucking eyes don't get any worse than they already did. but I was thinking about how that would actually look kind of cool. You know, like it would look really neat, and I wouldn't fucking mind having
it. Wouldn't
cool
deter
little,
me from buying it.
No, yeah. Exactly. And like just such an easy thing to incorporate into daily products that we see every day, right? Like one thing, and I want to give a big shout out to Propeller Brewing here in Halifax. Their menus at the pub, they've incorporated Braille into their menu, and it's, you know, it's just like every table has it. You it's the same menu that I would look at, that anyone else would look at, but just hard built into the menu is Braille on it. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we've been having a lot of conversations recently about accessibility. We did I think we talked about it on a recent episode or an episode to come about this event that we hosted for CBC about accessibility in the world, and how when we incorporate accessibility into the world, it really is just better off for everyone. Like it's not a hindrance to anyone. It only helps. It only makes things better. And I'm seeing this video from Lucy. It dawned on me how I'm surprised how we don't have more Braille kind of just like built into things, you know, like there's a space for that. There's a space for that. And it makes me kind of excited to think about a future where that's just more so like ingrained in products that are put out there for people to just have and use, and, you know, like adding a little bit of like a tactile thing that like you have on the products that you purchase, that for, you know, for you and I, it wouldn't really make any difference to us. But for someone like Lucy, it would make a whole world of difference, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because like, I think now after seeing that, if I went to buy a washer and there was like four options and I noticed that one of them had Braille on it, even as somebody who doesn't need that, I would be more inclined to buy the one with Braille because I'm looking and acknowledging at the fact that this company is supporting it, like building more accessible products, and I would be more inclined to buy it too. So I think like there's even like accessibility is obviously the first priority, but I feel like there's a net gain for the company to invest in developing that because they're reaching a larger market of people by making it more accessible. Yeah. And I mean, it's good for the brand to be that way too.
It's good for the brand. It's good. It's good for everyone. Like it doesn't hinder. Like it only improves.
Yeah.
So Lucy, congratulations. LG, kudos to you. So nice to hear that a company heard someone calling for help and actually did something about it. Yeah, that's a good like feel good Friday content right there. So thank you, Lucy, and thank you, LG.
Companies in general, and this really started. This started a few years ago, but it certainly accelerated after last May and George Floyd and social issues like really coming to the forefront of society. Companies are speaking from like the sort of like financial seat that I sit in a lot of times, like companies used to be exclusively beholden to the shareholder. And that has been something that is like, that has made a lot of people really rich and may, and really done nothing for a lot of, for a lot of people. And now companies, there has been a shift in it, and it's accelerating where companies are so much more concerned about what the general public think about their company. And they are much more swayed by public opinion than they have ever been. And so like,
yeah, except for Amazon, Jeff Bezos does not give a flying fuck.
But we are, entering
bit about
we are entering we're entering an era where I think we will see a lot more of like this sort of example, like a big company like LG, you know, responding and taking an action, and like for a huge company fairly quickly. I mean, we talked to Lucy a few months ago, and now there's been something that's been like an action that's been taken. So, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And I think public opinion, holds a lot of power, over companies that it didn't before. That is, and we're going to see that, we're going to see that, play take effect a lot more in the future.
Maybe it's a bit cynical though, but I still feel like it's motivated by financial gain. JT Firstman just put
The public opinion is what makes them money. That's right, exactly.
But I think that that's why they prioritize it, which like it is a bit of a cynical way to look at it, but it's true. But JT Firstman just put out did you guys see his video that he put out today? Like the fourth or fifth slide is, this is my impression of a corporation's tweet. And it's just trying to be like fucking young and hip
and inclusive.
But to your point, like we can all tell the difference when people are doing and like slapping on accessibility at the very end, which like to LG's credit, ultimately they ended up doing, in the same way that like we can, like in that joke, we can tell the difference between people actually caring about social, or companies actually caring about social issues, versus trying to make a buck cynically by saying, oh, we'll put a tweet out, or oh, we'll do this. Like when
that's real action.
Yeah, when accessibility is baked into the product from its conception into the design phase, it makes a better product, like Lucy said. Yeah.
Totally. When it's not an afterthought.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the same thing with the issues in social justice.
Yeah, you're totally right.
100%.
All right, Tay, I know you got a bit of a hard out, so let's move right into this week's segment of What the Hell?
I feel like that one was even better than normal.
Yeah.
That was better than normal, and it'll never get old. I love that.
So this is a fucking wild... I don't know how I found this. This is a wild, wild story, and I think this might top all the What the Hells we've done, because this just blew my fucking mind. This story came out a while ago, fucking 10 years ago now, May 2011. Astonishing survival of soldier with unexploded bomb wedged inside his stomach after Afghanistan ambush.
Sorry, can you say that again?
Whoa. I will. So Private Channing Moss, 23, he was in an armored car that was hit by an RPG. Now, look, the boys have been playing a lot of Warzone, so I know the three of us know what an RPG is. But for
when
folks,
you shoot it at a car, it fucking blows up.
Yeah, it blows right up. For people who don't know what an RPG is a rocket-propelled grenade. Okay, so it is an explosive that is put into a device that propels a grenade on a fucking rocket.
It's a rocket launcher.
It's a rocket launcher. Yeah, it's a bazooka.
That's a bazooka.
Yeah. So U.S. soldier has told the astonishing story of how he survived being impaled by an unexploded bomb, which became lodged into his abdomen during an ambush in Afghanistan.
Let's just scrap this whole What the Hell, and let's just get him on the podcast.
Is he alive?
Lauren... He is alive. We should definitely get him on the show.
All right.
That would be tight.
Dude, that's crazy.
So in a moment of incredible human triumph, Private Channing Moss, 23, has walked to the podium to collect various awards, including the Purple Heart and the Medal of Valor, since recovering from his ordeal. Private Moss was on patrol in Paktika province in eastern Afghanistan on Thursday, March 16th, when his unit was attacked, likely by Al-Qaeda or Taliban insurgents, in a mountainous region bordering Pakistan. Around 24 men from the 10th Mountain Division Alpha Company were driving a convoy of five Humvee armored vehicles and a pickup truck containing Afghan National Army troops when they were hit first by gunfire and then a hail of rocket-propelled grenades, RPGs. The pickup truck exploded, killing two of the Afghan soldiers, and as the rocket struck Moss's Humvee, the gunner recalls being thrown against the wall of the vehicle, and he was quoted saying, "I smelled something smoking, and I looked down, and I was smoking." The team called for a medevac, a medical evacuation via helicopter based at Salerno, Afghanistan, but did not tell the crew that Moss had a live RPG lodged in his abdomen for fear that the crew would not want to transport him. So I did a little bit of research into this.
Whoa.
And here's a photo of the X-ray. So when this... that's not it. sorry, everybody. But you know what? I can whip it up here. The photo of the X-ray is right here. So when this happens in war, it's happened, I guess, like a number of times.
Wow, really?
Soldiers are typically put in a room and basically treated as though they will. They're terminal and that there's no saving them because they are such a risk and the surgery is so difficult and there's no saying like whether or not this thing will fucking go off. So if you're not on YouTube, highly suggest you go over there. There's some crazy shit that I'm about to show you all. But what we're looking at right now, this is the X-ray of the RPG inside his abdomen. Kind of hard to make it out here. So what I will do is I'll first show you the animation of what actually happened that day. So RPG came in, impaled through his hip bone, went through his hip, up through his abdomen, and out the other side.
Whoa.
Here's a diagram here. So you can see the RPG went through his hip. The shaft of it came all the way through and out the other side. You can see his pelvis. You can see the entire RPG there. Whoa. And so pretty fucking wild, right? So an RPG, a mini missile around the length of a cricket bat, had entered through one side of Moss's hips, and its tip, a large grenade, was protruding from his opposite hip.
So kind of like came up and like on an angle through. So it looked almost like it might not have quite hit any like really important organs, I guess. Is that why he was like still able to live?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll get there. Somehow it had not detonated on impact, but if it exploded, it would kill everyone within a 30-foot radius. So like these are big, big explosions. In the first two major strokes of luck, the convoy's only medic, Jared Angle, was in the vehicle with Moss and able to treat him immediately, bandaging his wounds and stabilizing the RPG to ensure it didn't move around. The Black Hawk helicopter had to wait for the fighting on the ground to cease before they could land, which meant a long delay taking Moss outside of the golden hour, quote, golden hour, for trauma treatment that saved so many lives. When the helicopter landed, the crew could see immediately what had happened to Moss and knew that he should not be rescued. The U.S. Army policy in such situations states Moss should not have been transported because it could lead to the death of four medevac crew members, three other wounded soldiers, and the loss of a helicopter. However, the flight crew conferred and all agreed to take Moss. So they were like, you know what? Fuck this. Like, we could save this guy's life. Let's do it. They flew him to the nearest
goosebumps.
I know. They flew him to the nearest field hospital at the Oregon E base. But the actual again, the crucial unexploded detail of his injury was omitted. Sorry. But again, the crucial unexploded detail of his injury was omitted. So they still didn't say like, yo, this is a live RPG when he got to the hospital.
Oh.
Once at the hospital, the medical team led by surgeons Major John O and Major Kevin Kirk were confronted with the wound. Quote, it had fins coming out of the left side of his body and a huge, big bulge in the front of his right thigh, said Major Kirk. Again, U.S. Army Police states that Moss should not be operated on because of the risk to medics and other patients. Moss's second major stroke of luck came when a bomb disposal expert, Staff Sergeant Dan Brown, was on the base. Brown explained the possible scenarios to the medical team, including the possibility that they could all become pink mist if the grenade exploded, and they agreed to treat him.
Whoa. That's such an aggressive descriptor.
That is such a wild fucking statement. By this point, Moss's heart had stopped due to the massive blood loss, and the medics had to administer epinephrine, thank you, to restart the organ before they could operate. Sergeant Brown used a hacksaw to remove the RPG tail fin and very slowly eased the rocket back out through the entry wound. Brown then walked the unexploded bomb out of the operating theater to a bunker to detonate it. Moss was transferred to hospitals in Afghanistan and Germany en route to Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, where he was reunited with his wife, Lorena, and his daughters, Juliana and Ariana, now 6 and 4. Moss's internal organs were severely damaged, and he had suffered a shattered pelvis, leaving him unable to walk. He had 4 major operations and years of grueling physiotherapy that took him out of a wheelchair onto a walking frame and then to walking with a cane. He made pretty much a full recovery. So here's the wild, 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 wild thing.
No, yeah, no. That wasn't it.
No.
Everything okay. else, everything up till this point has been child's play.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you footage of the surgery.
Stop.
Oh. So this is talking over this is Major Kirk, the surgeon who pulled the RPG out and out of the room.
Captain Kirk?
It was a feeling of tension, of course, but of amazement same time that we were able to be involved in doing something like this, of removing an RPG from a person that was still alive. Our whole thought the entire time was how to keep Chaney Moss alive. The moment until I had that RPG outside of Chaney Moss, it was complete silence. I was inside myself. I was knowing what I was doing and had no distractions until the moment that RPG was out of my hands. Then that's when the world came back into play, and it was like just a vacuum was released and all the noise, all the commotion, and I just sat down and I started shaking. It was...
Wow. It's like giving birth. Whoa.
Complete release. Just complete amazement and release at the same time. And oh my God, we just finished something that saved a kid's life.
Wow.
Oh, dude. That makes me cry, man.
That's crazy.
Pretty wild, eh?
Like just the
because then they got to get rid of
like,
it. Immediately.
Yeah, the fact that so many people like put their lives on the line to like save that guy's life, knowing that they could all fucking turn into pink mist. Like,
and also knowing that like he still might not make it. Like the guy's fucking heart stopped and they were like, let's still get this thing out.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. I did a little more research, but like while reading this article about times that this had happened in the past, there's several times where soldiers have had unexploded explosives lodged into their bodies. And again, sometimes they just leave them. Sometimes they save them, bring them to a place and leave them in a room and just like can't touch them. There's been cases of soldiers receiving surgery on the other side of sandbags that have been packed like 6 feet high. And the surgeons are reaching through the sandbags to do the surgery in case it blows up. I mean, it's just wild, wild, wild shit. And it's, again, it's like, it's just a reminder of how, especially watching a video like that, you know, it's like we hear about war going on in different parts of the world. And it's become such a part of our, like, it's just
and
such
we glorify
a,
it in yeah, with video games,
all that kind of shit, right? And it's like it really is hard to comprehend how fucking insanely traumatic and fucked up the act of war really is. And so to see something like this is just really astounding. Major kudos to the entire team that were behind saving Moss's life. he recovered well enough to attend college in Georgia, and the soldiers in the medical team who helped save Private Moss, they were also honored pretty highly. So,
wow, that's a crazy story.
Isn't that crazy?
That's a crazy fucking story. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, that is totally bonkers.
Well, that concludes this week's.
Oh, Brian needs a break.
I know. Brian, you want to play Warzone after this? What do you think?
No, I'm going to now walk around and just try to like compassionately care for everybody in the game instead of shooting them with rocket launchers.
Yeah, right.
Who needs help? Does anybody need help?
Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate each and every one of you, whether you're listening at home via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the CBC Listen app, or perhaps just watching the Feel Good Friday episodes on your couch on YouTube. Whoever you are, wherever you are, we appreciate you. We love you. But we don't appreciate you or love you nearly as much as we do our patrons, our sweet, sweet potato patrons, because those folks, we reserve most of our love for them.
Mm-hmm. Clear divide. Mm-hmm. Clear divide. And sorry, Jer, I feel like you were passing the baton to me there, but then I realized that it felt like you didn't finish off the things that you usually say, but you're nodding at me now, so I'll go into it. If you want to send us any love, if you want to send us some cool stories, I think the joke's played out now, but manifestos are welcome. Letters at sickboypodcast.com. And if you want to be on the show, you can go to sickboypodcast.com/contact, fill out the form, and maybe we'll have you on the show. I mean, if you've ever had an RPG, you know, fucking lodged in your abdomen, like reply now. Like, yeah, you're going to definitely. The top of the list. Sorry to everybody else, but like
don't,
RPG,
don't sleep
stomach,
on it.
Top of the list. Yeah, don't sleep on it for sure.
And just letting everybody know that we are selling merch right now. You can get some cool Sick Boy swag at shop.sickboypodcast.com. If you're a patron, then you actually get a discount code as well. So, and we're creating some custom Patreon patron merch right now. So stay tuned for some of that. But other than that, a big thank you to the people who make this show happen. That would be Lauren Sankey, Tiller McGilvery, Jeremy Saunders, and me. And a huge thank you to our manager, Jeff Lonis, to the people who do the theme music on our various episodes, Rich O'Coin, Take Part, Kenneth Copeland and Company. And
Amen. Amen.
And a huge thank you to Donovan, the Meerkat Morgan. We love you all.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm Jeremy. And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.